This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of December 15th, 2019. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 112. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, the Is It Just Me commentary, headlines from the Pacific Rim and Pacific Northwest, the Big Deal feature, a Human Rights Day test in the new minority government House of Commons, as opposition parties united to create a committee on Canada-China relations. Listen to the question period debate from December 10th. And I will award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or can we all use a little less politicking at Vancouver City Hall until, say, September of the year 2022? In the Breaker.News and on CTV Vancouver this week, I revealed that Mayor Kennedy Stewart had spent almost $8,000 on that slick one-minute video he released on November 5th, the anniversary of his 2018 swearing-in. Stewart hired a producer with experience on BC NDP campaigns to put the video together. It was not essential advertising about programs and services. It was a glossy video intended to boost Stewart's image. Later in November, Stewart revealed that he is fundraising for his 2022 re-election campaign. It was also revealed that Vancouver residents could get hit with a 9.3% hike in taxes and utility fees in 2020. This is already a city that is wrestling with the sad sight of a tent city in December at Oppenheimer Park in the downtown east side, where there have been fires in tents and incidents involving gunshots. So the optics of the mayor's self-promotion on the taxpayer dime are awful any way you look at it. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. Danny Lee in the South China Morning Post reports, airlines in Hong Kong extend cuts to passenger capacity into spring 2020, with air travel downturn to continue even if protests wane. Carriers slash capacity on commercial flights in the first quarter of next year, which could mean millions fewer seats. Reduced availability on flights to run deep into 2020, even if anti-government unrest eases off in the new year. Hong Kong received 2.3 million fewer passengers between August and October compared with the same period last year. Tourist arrivals in October alone plunged 43.7%. Glenn McConnell in stuff.co.nz. Wakari White Island Tours, the future for volcano tourism in New Zealand. Why were 47 people allowed on an active volcano? How did this happen? It's the same question many people have asked in the wake of such tragedies. Volcanologists, the Whakatane community, and even the iwi who own White Island Tours are split about whether tours should continue. Meanwhile, families who have faced similar anguish and lost children and siblings during adventures in New Zealand believe stronger regulation is desperately needed to prevent more deaths. 8 people are confirmed dead and 8 people were missing and presumed dead on the island. Kyoto reports in the Japan Times, WizKid, Japanese boy, 9, becomes youngest to pass university-level math test. Shogo Endo, a fourth grader in Nishinomiya, Hyogo Prefecture, passed Suken's top-level first Q test held in October by the Mathematics Certification Institute of Japan. Endo beat the previous record set by Hiro Takahashi, who passed the test as an 11-year-old last year. More than 350,000 people take the test every year, according to the institute's website. The pass rate for the most recent first Q test was 14.4%, the institute said. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. Scott Greenstone reports in the Seattle Times, after dancer strips at Seattle Conference on Homelessness, agency director suspended. Performer Beyonce Black St. James danced topless in a sheer bodysuit, gave lap dances, and kissed attendees, according to a staffer at a local housing nonprofit who attended the conference in South Seattle. Kira Zolstra, organizer of the conference at South Seattle College, has been placed on leave. She led King County's Coordinating Agency for Homeless Services since January 2018 and is paid $123,000 a year. The event was billed as a lunch with cultural presentation. St. James is a Spokane-based entertainer who identifies as a trans woman. Quote, no one expected it, end quote, the unnamed staffer said. Mike Rogaway reports in The Oregonian. The Rock buys a scoop of Portland ice cream. Dwayne Johnson takes a steak in Salt and Straw. The Portland company appears to be trying to transition from a local gourmet novelty into a national brand. Johnson made the deal through the investment firm run by his ex-wife, the Garcia Companies. Originally a Northeast Portland food cart, Salt and Straw had been known for local ingredients and offbeat flavors such as strawberry honey balsamic with black pepper, pear and blue cheese, and arbequina olive oil. Lindsay Kynes reports in the Times Colonist, Island Health takes control of Victoria Seniors Home, concerns about staffing, cleanliness. Island Health has taken over the 217-bed Selkirk Seniors Village in Victoria, the third retirement concepts seniors home on Vancouver Island to fall under the Health Authority's temporary control, amid concerns about staffing shortages and neglect of residents. The same administrator appointed to run the Comox Seniors Village in Courtney on September 30th and the Nanaimo Seniors Village on November 27th will now oversee day-to-day operations at Selkirk. Retirement Concepts was purchased by Beijing-based Anbang Insurance in 2017. The physical properties are owned by Cedar Tree Investment Canada, an Anbang subsidiary. An affiliated BC company, West Coast Seniors Housing Management, is responsible for delivery of care and services. This week in the Breaker.News, these headlines. Mayor has no apologies for spending $8,000 on glitzy video while Vancouverites brace for tax hike. Why digital petitions become dumped documents in the BC legislature. Lawsuit sheds light on turmoil in First Nations Health Authority. Read the stories behind the headlines. Go to thebreaker.news. The big deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. December 10th, World Human Rights Day. Canadians Michael Kovrig and Michael Spavor have languished in Chinese jail for a full year as hostages or political prisoners whose cases are linked to Canada's detention of Huawei executive Meng Wanzhou, who lives in a mansion while she waits for her extradition hearing to begin next month. At the House of Commons in Ottawa, Canada's relationship with China dominated question period. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau left it to some of his new cabinet ministers to answer questions from conservatives. Durham MP Aaron O'Toole's question was taken by Karina Gould, the new Minister of International Development.
Well, member for Durham.
Mr. Speaker, today the House is debating the most challenging foreign policy relationship Canada has at present.
That's right.
China. The government has made serious missteps on security and trade issues with the Chinese government and is avoiding tough decisions when it comes to Huawei and other issues. So, will the Prime Minister agree to a specialized all-party committee to review all aspects of the Canada-China relationship?
The Honourable Minister for International Development.
Mr. Speaker, and I thank my honourable colleague for his question and for raising a very important issue in this House today that I think is resulting in some really important debate on all sides. We all agree that the Canada-China relationship is incredibly important, and we're exploring all of those issues when it comes to human rights, when it comes to democracy, when it comes to trade, when it comes to our security. And of course, the House and Parliament has many standing committees that deal with all of these issues, and we look forward to seeing how the committee decide to manage their own business. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Luc Berthold of Mégantic-L'Érable to Minister Gould.
Member from Mégantic-L'Érable. Well, the result is that canola is still banned in China, Mr. Speaker. China is blocking access to Canadian canola. It's repressing democratic protests in Hong Kong. And what does our new Minister of Global Affairs think of China? Well, this is what he said. In a world of uncertainty, of unpredictability, of questioning about the roles that have been established to govern our trading relationship, Canada, and I would say China, stand out as a beacon of stability, predictability, a rules-based system, a very inclusive society. Really? Mr. Speaker, when will the Prime Minister take off his rose-tinted glasses and stand up for Canadian values like freedom and human rights?
The
Honourable Minister for International Development. Mr. Speaker, Canada always stands up for Canadian values and principles, whether it's human rights, democracy, international rules. We are always there, and we are always expressing what we think and talking to our counterparts around the world, including China. It's important that all Canadians stand together here and form a united front so that we can protect our economy, our industry, and, of course, our rights and values.
Leona Alislev of Aurora Oak Ridges, Richmond Hill, to Public Safety Minister Bill Blair.
Well, member for Aurora Oak Ridges, Richmond Hill.
Mr. Speaker, our allies have said that Huawei participation in Canada's 5G network is a threat to national security. And security experts in CSIS have said that it's a threat. The only person who seems to think that it's not is the Minister of Public Safety, who said it's not appropriate to criticize a company that's used by the Chinese government to spy on Canadians. When will the Prime Minister protect Canadians and ban Huawei?
The Honourable Minister of Public Safety.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And first of all, I should point out to you, sir, that the statement just attributed to me is completely false. Government takes the security of Canada's telecommunications networks very seriously, and that is exactly why we have been conducting an examination of emerging 5G technology and the associated security and economic considerations. We want to make sure that Canadians have access to the most beneficial 5G technology, and at the same time, we will make sure that the Canadians are safe and that their systems will not be compromised. We're taking all scientific and security factors into account, including discussions with our allies and our security agents.
The Honourable Member for Aurora Oak Ridges, Richmond Hill, has a question. I'm sure she wants to hear an answer. I was sitting very close to the Minister, and I'm having a hard time. So I just want to remind the Honourable Members that the Honourable Member wants to hear the answer to their question. The Honourable Member for Aurora Oak Ridges, Richmond Hill.
Mr. Speaker, the Prime Minister has failed to manage our relationship with the government of China. From control of Canadian resource, technology, and service companies by Chinese state-owned entities, to cyber attacks on our communications networks, to security concerns in our Arctic, to international drug trafficking of deadly substances like fentanyl. There are many areas of critical importance that require a thorough review and balanced approach. When will the Prime Minister support our motion to appoint a special committee to review this for China?
The Honourable Minister for International Development.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And again, I thank my honourable colleague across the way for raising these important issues. These are issues that all Canadians are concerned about, including on this side of the House. And of course, as the Government of Canada, it's something that we are working very diligently on. As I mentioned, when it comes to trade, when it comes to agriculture, when it comes to foreign affairs and security, there are committees of the House that deal with these issues already. And of course, we look forward to seeing how these committees decide to manage their business, and should they be interested in learning more about the Canada-China relationship, we'll of course be looking forward to working with them. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Michael Chong of Wellington Halton Hills to Minister Gould.
For Wellington Halton Hills.
Monsieur le Président, il y a...
Mr. Speaker, 65 years ago, soldiers from Winnipeg and Quebec City defended the citizens of Hong Kong, including my father. In the Battle of Hong Kong, hundreds of Canadian soldiers were killed. Today, 300,000 Canadians live in Hong Kong, and millions of them have protested in the streets for their freedom. Will this government take a stronger position, a clearer position on Hong Kong? The Honourable Minister of International Development. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As my colleague said, this is something that all Canadians believe, that we should be supporting the people of Hong Kong. And I'd like to thank the member for sharing his personal story. We will always stand up for human rights in Hong Kong and for the Prime Minister and the Minister of Foreign Affairs. They have both spoken to their counterparts and their other partners around the world to ensure that human rights and democratic rights are protected in Hong Kong. Thank you.
Minister Marco Mendocino.
The Honourable Member for Thornhill.
Mr. Speaker, Dai Qing is a Chinese citizen, once China's most famous investigative journalist,
a former political prisoner, widely recognized for her writing and lectures at universities across North America. She was invited to Canada again this fall to discuss her new book, but when she applied for a routine visa, she was surprised her application was subject to review. Her passport, 2 months later, still held by the Canadian Embassy. Mr. Speaker, can the minister assure the House that Dai King's visa application is not being blocked for political reasons?
The Minister for Immigration.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And as this is my first occasion to rise in the House, I want to thank the good people of Eglinton Lawrence for re-electing me as their Member of Parliament. And of course, I want to assure my honourable colleague that these visa applications are processed by highly trained professional officials within my department. We take these applications very seriously, and of course, they are not motivated, nor would they ever be, for political purposes. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Port Moody, Port Coquitlam's Nellie Shin to Public Safety Minister Bill Blair.
The honourable member for Port Moody, Coquitlam.
Mr. Speaker, fentanyl overdoses are the cause of more and more deaths in Canada, and is especially prevalent in British Columbia. Parents and residents in my riding are concerned about the impact of this crisis in our region and the safety of our children and youth. A significant amount of this drug is illegally imported from China. The Liberals have had 4 years to act. When will the Liberals take action to prevent opioids from entering our country?
Good question.
The Honourable Minister for Public Safety.
Mr. Speaker, our government recognizes the tragedies that have taken place across Canada as a result of synthetic drugs, the opioid crisis, and methamphetamine in so many of our communities. And that's why we have taken very significant steps to interdict the supply of these drugs and the precursor chemicals used in their manufacture. We've ensured that our law enforcement agencies and border security officials have additional resources to deal with this crisis, and we are working very collaboratively with our international partners to keep these drugs and the chemicals used in their manufacture out of our country.
Later in the day, the minority Liberal government lost a vote by a margin of 107 to 148 as the Conservatives successfully proposed striking a special committee to examine Canada-China relations. The committee will begin hearings and calling witnesses in 2020. The virtual Nanaimo Bar brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting. Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to a person or group that is making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to Greg McDougall and his team at Harbor Air, which made aviation history on December 10th. McDougall piloted the first commercial flight of an electric airplane, a de Havilland Beaver outfitted with an engine by Seattle's Magna X. The short solo flight over the Fraser River near the Vancouver International Airport's South Terminal gained worldwide attention. In a couple of years, Harbor Air hopes to sell tickets on scheduled flights via electric-powered seaplanes. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of December 15th, 2019. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on December 15th in 2001, the Leaning Tower of Pisa reopened after $27 million in repairs and reinforcement, but they didn't fix the lean? Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit TheBreaker.News on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/TheBreakerNews, patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. Until next week.